Good evening. My name is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's Teleton Hall. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this Teleton Hall. Just to remind you, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, I know that we're ready to roll with the calls, and if you can take it from here.
Well, thank you very much, Hugh, and I want to thank all the residents in our district who are participating on tonight's call. Some of the best feedback that we get comes directly from constituents, and having the opportunity through this telephone town hall to answer questions that folks may have gives us that opportunity to discuss the important issues in our community. As Hugh said, the format is if folks ask questions anytime, they can press star 3 on their phone. And for anybody out there that has any questions for us, we're happy to get started and talk about some of the issues that are percolating here in Harrisburg.
Senator, I know that we have some folks who are joining us here this evening. We'll give some time to get them all situated. This upcoming fall, we have a number of issues that are prime that are being loaded into the legislative mix, or so to say. We have a lot of issues, but few days. Can you talk a little bit about the issues that we're going to be talking about this coming fall?
Sure. There are a number of issues that will continue to be at the forefront that Senate Democrats will be advocating when we go back to Harrisburg very soon. Top of the list, of course, is going to be the continued conversation of education funding and how we are properly funding education. A lot of work right now is being done with respect to the Basic Education Funding Formula Commission, legislation that we passed earlier this year that really addresses how we drive out state dollars to our local school districts. That's a major issue that we're going to deal with. We're going to continue to talk about how we grow jobs in our Commonwealth. As we've seen now this summer, spring and summer, we've seen the impact of the transportation funding plan in terms of the road work and construction alike that's been done, has been done and will continue to be done over the course of the next several months. That is creating jobs. It's putting folks back to work. It's putting engineers and architects and laborers and folks all along those lines who are participating. You know, private companies now have contracts with the state to do various road work and bridge work. And also it helped us address the Port Authority issue to allow us in Allegheny County to stabilize funding for Port Authority to make certain that folks could get to and from work. We know that we're going to have a continued conversation about the UPMC Highmark issue that's taking place in the Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, and really Western Pennsylvania region. That dialogue will continue with respect to the implementation and the monitoring of the respective plans that have been put into place and the role that the state has played along those lines of trying to craft an agreement, Hugh, that would allow for continued access to high-quality care at a reasonable cost here in Western Pennsylvania. And we're going to continue to monitor the issue with respect to minimum wage controversy that's taken place. We think that we have to have that dialogue, and it's an appropriate one to have during the course of this fall. And finally, one of the areas that Senate Democrats have been at the forefront of has been addressed more recently with the federal approval of the Medicaid expansion program. We know now that the state has finally agreed to participate in Medicaid expansion. We think that's extremely important, where over 500,000 folks will now have access to a modest level of health care. We'll grow 35,000 plus jobs in Western Pennsylvania and across the Commonwealth, and we'll have a nearly $3 billion infusion of health care services into Pennsylvania. We think that's extremely important to have a healthy workforce. But right now, we don't know all the details of the plan, so we're sort of keeping a cautious and optimistic eye on that issue, but we will continue to monitor that and see what if there needs to be done in Harrisburg, if anything, in order to implement the appropriate plan for Pennsylvania residents. So those are some of the things that are on the horizon. There are some other issues we'll be dealing with, I think, along the lines of, for example, CRIS legislation, for example, for our smaller third-class cities to allow them and to give them the economic tools that they might need. And also right to know, I think, is an issue with respect to our state-related and our state system schools. So modifications and changes there, along with changes to the Act 47 process in terms of how communities get in, how long they can stay in, and some of the things they need to monitor along those lines. Those are sort of a handful or two handfuls of some of the things that I think we'll be dealing with in the fall.
Thank you, Senator. I know there are just some weighty issues and just a little bit of time, but you've outlined well the number of things that we're going to get into. Senator, as a part of this process, we've had some folks who have taken the time to submit questions. Mm-hmm. And before we go live to some of the folks who have joined us, I just want to ask a couple of questions that have been submitted. We have a question from Michael in Pittsburgh, and he asked, now that Act 89 has created a way to fund transportation projects, what projects do you think would be particularly important for your district?
Well, I think that we've already seen some of those activities take place in and around the region. You're seeing a lot of work being done, what I'll call resurfacing or milling work, to really help rehabilitate a number of the roads and streets. That's taking place throughout the city of Pittsburgh and throughout our district, so that there's a variety of streets and roads along those lines. But in the city of Pittsburgh in particular, I think I would point to projects along the Smithville Street Bridge, for example. Work needs to be done there. The Liberty Bridge, one of the ones that I know that is in the mix in the early stages, or middle stages, I would say, is the Birmingham Street Bridge. I think that's a critically important project that needs to be done as we go forward. So there's a lot of bridge work, but there's also a lot of road construction needs to be done. And one of the areas that I think that we can't lose sight of is the impact that Act 89 has had on mass transit. It's helped us stabilize Port Authority, allow us to maintain our rates as it relates to our fares, but also allows us the opportunity to make certain that we have a steady, reliable transportation system, mass transit system in Pennsylvania and Allegheny County, and we're pleased about that as well. And there's also some other programs. You know, there was something called the orphan routes that, you know, the Mon Valley routes that are now being able to be sustained, as well as ACDOT in the airport area. A whole host of those type of things that are funded that tie directly to people getting to and from work. And that, to me, is a critical component of Act 89.
Well, thank you, Senator, and thank you, Michael, for submitting that question. And just a reminder to those who have joined us, and we are getting a healthy response here tonight, just to remind you, if you'd like to ask the Senator a question, we can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, I'd like to go to the live callers now. We're going to go to Cindy. Cindy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator. My question is, well, I have three of them. One is about the transportation, the busing in Pittsburgh. Port Authority has really dropped the ball in a lot of areas with their transportation. Like, people have to walk 2 miles, 3 miles, you know, to get a bus at a bus stop. And do you think now that Port Authority has, you know, worn out its welcome as a monopoly, and do you think we should have more buses, you know, different companies who could pick up the slack?
I think there are, let me first answer the question about routes. First and foremost, you know, we've had a significant number of route reductions over the course of the past couple of years, largely related to the lack of appropriate level of funding at Port Authority. They are revisiting those issues. They are revisiting the issue about what routes would need to be reinstated or which ones need to be revised to make it easier for folks to access those routes. With respect to the ability to have other companies come into play, I believe that we've gone down that path before. And the reason there is a Port Authority in Allegheny County is because the private busing companies fail to be able to stay in business. What happens is you get a situation where the only routes that you have are the routes that are sort of the cream of the crop, where they know they can make money. And the routes in the more difficult areas and the more difficult times, you know, the midnight to 8 shift, so to speak, whenever off hours, folks are working off hours, those routes don't exist as plentifully as you would like in a private system. However, there are opportunities. The Port Authority has the ability, and people have the ability to have a private route. We had one that was running in the North Hills for a long time there, for a while there. That opportunity exists, but it's not as a fruitful endeavor for entities. So along those lines, they're going to continue to look at some of those things as we go forward. But they're now just the funding stream is now starting to run to Port Authority, and they're assessing a lot of those issues.
Well, thank you, Cindy, for the call. And again, I'd like to remind those who have joined us here this evening, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any time, press star 3 on your phone. Senator, we're going to go to Christine now from Pittsburgh. Christine, you're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. This is Christine.
Hi, Christine.
From Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Nice to hear from you.
I like this forum. This is really interesting. I've never been a part of something like this. I'm very pleased you're doing this. Thanks.
Thanks for staying on the line. So what's your question? What can we help you with?
Gosh, I have a million questions in my head, but I'm going to ask you about the gas industry. You know, it's a big issue topic for the gubernatorial campaigns right now, but it's always been an issue for me just because I've sort of lived all over the U.S., born, raised here in Pittsburgh, but came back, and I was really surprised by what we are doing locally with the gas industry. I love, you know, that it's providing jobs. It's always great, but I just am concerned about some of the passes that it seems the gas industry employers here have been given with regards to safety of the drilling, how they're going about it, where they're going about it, closeness to homes, residences, waterways, contamination, those types of things, and also the financial passes that some of the, well, all of the firms have been given here in the state of Pennsylvania, where they have not been given those kinds of opportunities in other states. And it's nice in one level because they're all flocking here, but it kind of reminds me of the days in Pittsburgh when corporations got a lot of tax breaks and all flocked here, and then the minute those tax breaks were removed, they left.
Thank you, Christine.
Yeah, and well, okay. I think you're right on the mark. I think that as it relates to the Marcellus industry, and you're talking about the gas, Marcellus shale gas industry, we have to strike the right balance. And in my view, we have not struck that appropriate balance. While I, too, am pleased that we have created a number of jobs, in, particularly in southwestern Pennsylvania, and we're well poised with this whole cracker facility to really grow jobs in the Beaver County and Allegheny County region and really establish new industries here in western Pennsylvania. While that's all good, we also have to be conscious of the environmental issues that you've talked about, the nature of our, the quality of our water, our air. We have to more monitor that far more strenuously than we have. And we have to provide the resources to the appropriate agencies to be able to do that. DEP should not be taking drastic cuts year in and year out, as they have under this administration, to weaken their ability to monitor and to regulate the industry. The amount of money that we receive currently through the impact fee from the industry is woefully short. It's around $200 million. While it sounds like a lot, when you can look at where we should be. Senate Democrats have been arguing and advocating for a 5% Marcellus shale tax without any back-end tax credits and layering it on top of the existing impact fee. That would put us right around 6.5 when you look, and that puts us right in the sweet spot where many of the other states are that do, in fact, have an extraction tax. So we believe that a 5% extraction tax would generate an additional $600 to $700 million, 650-670 range, that our plan would be to take those dollars and put them in a couple of places. One, sort of lockbox them away for a dedicated education funding program. So every single school district in Pennsylvania shares in this natural resource that we have plentifully here in western Pennsylvania. The second place we would take a chunk of that money would be putting it in back into the DEP and to the environmental community to make certain that we have, as I said earlier, the appropriate monitoring, the appropriate enforcement, the appropriate regulations on the books to monitor how we're dealing with our water, air quality, and the like. So we cannot give these entities the passes that they've received. With respect to drilling in and around the proximity of homes, you know, Act 13 addressed some of that. And the courts supported a position that Senate Democrats took as it relates to local municipal zoning. The court struck that piece from there to allow, saying that we should have local municipal zoning, which I think is important. And at the end of the day, that was a major issue for us, and we were successful along those lines. So there's a lot of things to be done. There's no question that this whole conversation will not likely take place this fall. We're going to talk about it, but I can assure you that if we have a new governor, which it looks like we might, this will be at the forefront of the conversation for next year, and it's going to be producing the appropriate amount of revenue, and we're going to push to drive it into education and into our environmental programs throughout the Commonwealth. But thank you for the question, Christine.
Christine, thank you very much for the call, and to remind those who have joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any time, you can press *3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Ted next. Ted has a question. Ted, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Senator Costa. My name is Ted Jones. I live in the city of Pittsburgh, and I have a twofold question. The first thing, they closed down Conley, a trade school here. Most of the trades or the highest paying jobs for the middle class people. We don't have that training anymore. There used to be partnerships with businesses, and that is now done. And now when you need plumbers and different people like that, they're coming and constructing here from out of state. Here in the East End, they're building up all kinds of construction. Port Authority's constructing, they're making hotels and houses and stuff, and that will be employment for people in this area. And they say they can't find them. And the second thing, as a minority, I want to know why it is. I see 100 construction people standing around. I see two minority people there out of 100 people. This is all state and federal and tax money, and you know, and black people or minority people are taxpayers, and I don't think that we're getting a fair return on our tax things because there's a high minority employment rate amongst male and female, and more should be done to get these people to work because you talk about crime. They've had studies for 100 years that tell when you have high unemployment and an inability to earn a living, you have criminal activity. I mean, that's been that way since the 1900s. So what are you doing about that?
I can share with you a couple things. One, you referenced Conley Center. I've been working closely with my colleague, Senator Jim Furlow, and there's a rebirth at Conley Center taking place right now. There's significant state investment, and precisely what you've talked about, doing the job training that needs to be done. Green Innovators is a group that's really taken the lead, working with Penn State University, with the Community College of Allegheny County, with the operating engineers to train individuals who have the ability to operate the buildings in western Pennsylvania and downtown Pittsburgh. There's a whole host of programming that's taken place along those lines. Another program Senator Furlow has been working on, and I've been obviously working with him as a treasurer of Community College, we've been working with Dr. Bullock to establish a program at the West Hill Center, trying to connect people in various types of positions, training, I should say, certificate programs. In fact, we're working to try to get funding to get folks from inner city neighborhoods and literally pick them up at certain places and drive them out to the West Hill Center to provide the training that takes place at the CCAC West Hill Training Center. There's no question we have to do a better job of getting minorities and folks who are properly trained into those areas to allow them to live a successful life and sustain a family wage as it relates to their ability to have one of these skills and being certified and the like. That's something that we've been cognizant of at the community college, but my colleagues and I have been working on to try to achieve that as well. And one of the things that we haven't done here at the state is providing resources for those programs. Those are precisely the type of things that this administration has cut from its budget. I can tell you that the Department of Community and Economic Development 4 years ago was a $600 million program, a department, and they had various programs, job training programs, a whole host of various programs was targeted to get people the training they need, to get them the skills they need, working in collaboration with businesses to find the right people for the right job, and also in the trades as well. Partnerships with the trades and colleges and the like, and getting recruiting folks. Those dollars have been gone. Now we're down to $150+ million in a program in a department that was four times that size. So that's a concern. We have to make investments in those programs to train and properly train and provide the skills. Well, this administration hasn't made those investments. We want to make those investments, and we talk about it in our Senate Democratic plan called PA Works. We have a number of pieces of legislation to do precisely that, provide dollars for programs that have been successful. Those ones that don't work, we don't invest in. But the ones that do work, we invest in them, and we increase the investment, and maybe we tweak the criteria and to make certain that it can be available to more folks. That type of information we have on our Senate website. You can go to SenatorCosta.com, look at it. You can follow that activity, that discussion we've had on our Facebook page, my Facebook page, Senator Costa, and also Twitter. I mean, we're trying to reach as many people as possible to communicate the things that we're trying to do along those lines. But we certainly believe we have to do more along those lines.
Ted, thank you for the call. And to remind all those who have joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone. Senator, we're going to go to Dennis now. Dennis is from Penn Hills. He has a question for you. Dennis, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. Good evening, Senator. I know you from way back when you worked for the Housing Authority, way back.
I chair the Mental Health Advocacy Council at the VA here. Now, mm-hmm. I've been home from Vietnam 46 years, and I have a concern with the senators in Harrisburg because the only person that I've heard speak for veterans was Senator Furlow through the years, State Representative DeLuca, and now I hear Ed Gainey. As a Vietnam veteran, I'm very concerned because I don't hear nobody speaking for us because we're the ones that give everybody in this country the freedoms that they have. And for whatever reason, we don't get the respect that we should get. And I don't mean just Iraq and Afghanistan troops. I mean all the veterans from World War I, World War II, all the way down the line. When you're representing and you're taking care of people, people need to mention what they're doing for each section of veterans. And I don't hear that.
Well, let me share with you what we've been doing. First of all, I've been very engaged in the veterans community, having participated in things you mentioned. Representative DeLuca in Penn Hills, longtime advocate for veterans in the Penn Hills community through the Senior Center. I've done some work along those lines there. I conduct a veterans luncheon every year. We're going to do it again near this November. But more importantly, Senate Democrats. I serve as Democratic leader, and one of the things that I charged our folks to do was develop a veterans program. And working in conjunction with a number of our members, Senator Furlow in particular, you mentioned, but also Senator Tim Solovey from Washington County, who is the chairman of our Senate Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, we put a whole package of veterans bills together to provide incentives to help people do a variety of things, from housing to job creation to a whole host of other areas in the area of health care. We've done that. But tomorrow, Senate Democrats are having a hearing in McKeesport, led by Senator Jim Brewster, McKeesport Senator Jim Brewster, Senator Vince Hughes, myself, Senator Hughes from Philadelphia is coming in. We're going to have a roundtable discussion about veterans issues tomorrow in McKeesport. So if you can get there or you know some friends who want to be there, we'll be there about 12:30 or so. We have some other things going on that day, but Senator Hughes will be there. I think the hearing starts at 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And so we're going to talk about veterans issues because we recognize that they're important. And we agree with you along those lines. And it's just not one era of veterans. It's veterans in a broader sense. And one of the folks who over the years has been a strong ally of veterans as well was Senator Jack Wagner. And I think he's always been at the forefront and continues to be.
Well, Dennis, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to right back to the callers. We're going to go to Michael in Pittsburgh who has a question about jobs for college graduates. Michael, go ahead. You're with Senator Acosta.
Hey, Senator Acosta, how you doing?
Hello, Michael. Listen.
My question is, as an Edinburgh University graduate and also a veteran of OIEF in Afghanistan, I have come back to realize that there are jobs. McDonald's is a job, Burger King's a job, Wendy's a job. Right now, with my college degree, I have a BA in political science and a focus in legal studies. I can't find a job. I know people that have master's degrees and people that are going on to get legal degrees and legal certificates. They're not finding careers. Jobs are out there. People are not finding them because they're, A, not applying themselves, or, B, they're just too good for the jobs that are out there. Now, what is the legislation doing for careers and people that went on and completed their completed and graduated college, even with their certificate or further their education, period. And secondly, what are we going to do for those that are returning with PTSD who are making, I believe now the VA dropped it down to 10-20% if you have PTSD, and I know several people that have it. What are we going to do for those folks while they're recovering from their mental illness?
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Well, let me start with the latter question first. With respect to, we have to work, the state of Pennsylvania has to work in conjunction with folks who come back and are dealing with mental illness like post-traumatic stress disorder. I think that's imperative that we have to work together with them, and we have to provide the safety net for folks to be in a position to be able to receive the appropriate treatment. Again, It goes back to program cuts that this administration has made, the reluctance to want to make investments. When you look at the areas of human service programming, these programming agencies have taken a significant hit, an $80 million cut in human service program, the bulk of which was felt by the mental health agencies. So there's a lot more we need to make investments here. That's something Senate Democrats have talked about along the lines of making investments, particularly in the area of mental health, mental retardation, along those lines. The issue with respect to jobs, under this administration, we've cut DCD. We've talked about, in this administration, we're down, we have an $18,000 job deficit that we have in this administration. And the jobs are not necessarily there. There are some that are there. You referenced the legal community. I can tell you, a son who's a lawyer, I serve on the Duquesne University Law School Advisory Committee. We're putting out young law graduates that aren't finding work, and it's in paralegal programs across the region as well. The work is not there in the legal community as it used to be, and I think that's something that we're all cognizant of. If you look at applications to law schools and the number of students in law schools today, that number has been diminishing over the course of the past several years, largely because of the job deficit. But work for veterans in particular, we continue to work through our veterans program to try to find those jobs to allow that to take place. And we provide various programs along those lines, incentives to get folks engaged in various industries. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to push that. Senator Tim Salovey has been at the forefront, and I've been working closely with him along those lines.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for the call. If you have a question for Senator Acosta, press *3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Patricia now. Patricia, she has a question about FIA funding. Patricia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Hello, Senator Acosta. I just am curious. FIA, over the years, there were a lot of money, and I don't know if it's because of the current administration or what, but there's less and less money each year for FIA grants. And also, my son goes to Pitt Johnstown. Are you still there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, and he goes to Pitt Johnstown, and the Perkins loan was taken away from him this year, and he got a Perkins loan last year. I know the Perkins loan has nothing to do with the state, but
right. The
colleges say that they get so much Perkins loan money, and that's it. And as for the FIA, they said the state really doesn't give any
FIA
money.
Yeah, the state, we have not been able to maintain what we should be maintaining on the FIA side, and more folks are eligible for a FIA loan. So while the pot of money available hasn't been growing because we're not making the investments that we should be, the number of students who are eligible diminishes the amount, and that's part of the problem. We have to do a better job along those lines. But it's not only the amount of money that schools or students receive from FIA or Pell Grants or Perkins or whatever, it's also about how we fund higher education institutions here in the Commonwealth. Again, not to harp on this administration, but the state-related and the state system schools are down 20% of where they were just 4 years ago. So there's hundreds of millions of dollars less at these institutions now than there were 4 years ago. And that's the major problem. This governor came in and tried to cut Pitt, Penn State, Lincoln, and Temple, the state-related, and the 14 state universities. I'm an IEP graduate, so I understand what's going on. And tried to cut it by 50%, we end up, the best we can get back was we were able to get back 30% of that. But the bottom line is we have fewer dollars going into college, which forces them to shift the cost to on tuition side, and that's what we have to prevent. But at the same token, I think everyone agrees that we have to take a look at these institutions and making certain that we are getting our best bang for our dollars that we're putting there, because there's some belief that In many respects, there may be a little bit too much on the administrative side that may be appropriate. We need to start taking a look at ways in which they can measure and monitor how they're cutting costs associated with higher education. But FIA tries to do the best they can. Senator Wayne Fontana from Allegheny County is the vice chairman of FIA, works very, very hard, actually worked very hard to establish a job training center here or a place here where they do a lot of their work in Greentree. We now have about 150 people working there for FIA, which is a great thing to be able to bring those jobs to Western PA. But at the end of the day, we have to find a way to get more resources there and to control the cost of, of higher education and increase Pennsylvania's investment in higher education. That's how your son or daughter will be able to finish a four-year degree and not be unduly burdened with outrageous student loan debt that for example, that my son and daughter are experiencing.
Well, Patricia, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to go right to the back to the callers. We're going to go to Douglas from Pittsburgh. Douglas, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Senator, I really am taking in this forum, and I started with a question about shale gas, which you already answered. So I'll go on to another question that has to do with what the callers have been talking about. And my question is, over the long term, the growth of Pennsylvania's economy relative to other states, New York State, and even other neighboring states, has been relatively less. So the same question that I pose to our dear departed Mayor O'Connor was how, in what aggressive ways will the state be able to, and will the state Senate Democratic Caucus be able to aggressively grow the economy in Pennsylvania so that, and you grow the economy by growing the population. You need more people, and unless you have a different idea, you'll say that. But how can all of Pennsylvania become more attractive to more population as well as more industry and what it brings? Because everything everybody has asked so far is somehow contingent upon our performance relative to other states as a state that brings in population, industry, and all of that which feeds an economy.
Well, thank you very much. That's a great call and a great question. I will say that you're correct that Pennsylvania lags behind all of our surrounding states. When you look at the seven or eight surrounding states to Pennsylvania, they're all cleaning our clock with respect to job growth. That's number one. Number two, when you look at the 10 largest states, and by the way, we're dead last in those seven states. When you look at the 10 largest states in the country, we are dead last in that top 10 grouping, based on size in terms of job growth. And we went from 7th to 48th compared to the Rendell administration to this administration. I point to some of the following factors. One, Governor Rendell was not afraid to make investments and programs, economic development programs, that set the stage for the investment by entities to come here into Pennsylvania. Wasn't afraid to say that we're going to provide an incentive and we're going to provide the tools to companies to come here and locate here and build jobs here and grow jobs here. They lay the infrastructure that needs to be done, both the physical infrastructure but also the financial infrastructure to allow them to be successful. That's what has to happen. I think it's the quality of life that we have, I think, that's going to go a long way in terms of making certain that people want to come here and stay here. We've been blessed in the Pittsburgh region, have a wonderful quality of life in terms of our museums, our theater, our educational institutions, many of our schools in and around the county. It goes on and on, what we have here. But that's an attraction to folks who and businesses who want to come here. But they also have to have the appropriate climate. The climate for me is not only an economic climate based on taxes or whatever, but it's also based on a workforce. We've got a wonderful workforce, and we have to let folks know that. We have to properly train them in a new environment and as new industries come along. So what would Senate Democrats do? What we've been working on has been PA Works for a couple of years now. We have a package of about 25 or 28 different bills that go a long way in trying to make the investments that we need to make. Just to give you an example, we have a variety of tax credit programs to allow us to be able to do that, enticing folks to come here, establish a business by giving them some tax credits. It's a loss of revenue to the Commonwealth in the short term, but in the long term, it brings people to this region, it grows jobs, it stabilizes communities, and at the end of the day, we receive those dollars back three or fourfold. We're also talking about things in PA Works as it relates to, for example, an infrastructure bank. Not necessarily investment bank. It's not necessarily the roads and bridges, but rather it is an investment bank, an infrastructure bank on technology to make sure that we're properly wired for this new age of technology, to make sure that we have the resource along those lines. The other piece is education funding. We have to talk about having strong, solid schools. So when a business looks to locate here, they look at what the Commonwealth's going to assist them with. They're going to look at the workforce. They're going to look at the tax structure, of course, and they're going to look at the educational system. Are their employees going to want to come here? And are their families going to be able to participate and receive a good, solid foundation, educational foundation? That coupled with, as I said earlier, the quality of life. Those are the things that they look for, and those are the things that we've been working on to try to position Pennsylvania and in our region to be successful along those lines. So it's a sort of multifaceted approach to what we're trying to do. But it starts with making investments in education, making investments in programs that allow people to be properly trained so that the workforce is there ready to be able, with a baseline of knowledge and experience and skills that are transferable to whatever industry may come here.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Douglas. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, press star 3 at any time. You can get in the queue, and we'll put you on the line as quickly as we can. Senator, we're going to go to now James from Squirrel Hill. James, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Good evening, Senator Acosta. This is Jim
Hi,
from
James.
Squirrel Hill. I had a brief question the last time about the Legislative Officer Research Liaisons, which you answered very well, and you have I still think you have an encyclopedia. I'm going to throw my state manual away after I attend five or six more of these. But I had a question related to my original question. If I was in the state legislature and there was a complicated piece of legislation that I wanted some objective analysis on, now I understand that Laura was zeroed out, and I understand why. Do we have any mechanism in place for that legislature to get some good objective information?
The Laura program was solid and continues to whatever extent possible. That's carried on largely by the Reference Bureau now. But I think that we've really become dependent upon internal agencies to try to do that. For example, the Legislative Budget and Finance Committee looks at issues that are relevant and timely. We look at the Joint State Government Committee to look at things along those lines, the Local Government Commission. So those are just a couple of agencies that exist today that have sort of been pulled under a single umbrella to work to try to address issues within certain areas of government. So they are objective, and I think that they've been very, very helpful. But sometimes they are I don't want to say crisis-driven, but issue-driven, timely issue-driven, whereas other times in the past we had thoughtful review of issues, which I thought were helpful to help frame issues and frame questions for us in a way we may not have otherwise framed it. So one was proactive, I guess. The other one, now I think we're more reactive to what's taking place. We do have, on the financial side, we have something now called the Pennsylvania Independent Finance Office or Fiscal Office. That's an agency that now is analogous to the Congressional Budget Office. So oftentimes they're required to give reports about revenue and expenditures in the Commonwealth, projections, what our revenue number might be, things of that nature. They also do other studies and other reports as well along the lines of revenues and expenditures and trends in Pennsylvania. They've been helpful. They've been in existence the last couple of years from that aspect of things. But they don't necessarily attack policy issues and the specifics of policy issues. They can only tell us if a particular policy issue initiative was put forth, what it would mean fiscally to the Commonwealth. So we have work to do in terms of developing programs to continue to do that. And I would also suggest that we have more and more sort of independent groups, foundation groups and other nonprofits that are out there now analyzing issues. And we're blessed in Western PA to have RAND Corporation, for example, helping us frame issues. The Pew Foundation, other places like that have been very, very good and it's helping to sort of establish public policy issues and set the framework for a discussion along those lines. At the institutional side of the equation, University of Pittsburgh, we have the Institute of Politics, which I think has been wonderfully successful in helping, again, framing issues and doing the research, led by Terry Miller and her group. Before that, Mo Kuhlman, a legend in Pennsylvania public policy, and now going to be led by Mark Nordenberg. Chancellor Nordenberg has agreed to sort of run the organization, but but sort of serve as the chairman, so to speak, working closely with Terry and Mo and others. That's a wonderful vehicle for us to have public policy discussions that help frame issues. So while we don't have all the tools we used to have at the state level, we do have regional tools that I think are addressing a lot of state policy matters that I think are very important.
Well, thank you very much for your call, James. Senator, we have lots of other folks that are on the line interested in speaking with you today. We're going to go to Barb from Swissvale. Barb, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Barb.
It's good to hear this. I'm so glad that you decided to do this because it's great. I'm excited to hear all the other people asking the questions that I have concerns about. So we're all basically heading for the same thing and looking for the same kind of answers, and you're coming up with them.
Thank you. I
worry about the Valley. I worry about Braddock and Turtle Creek and East Pittsburgh and all the way out towards Pitcairn and what have you. The big employers have left, U.S. Steel and Westinghouse and so on. You know, when kids graduated from high school, if they weren't going on to college, they knew that they'd get a job in one of those plants, and they had that security. But that's gone now, and I wonder how we can get it back. Can you help us?
Yeah, it's a great question. The old steel industry and the like don't exist anymore, so we have to transition. And in parts of the region, that transition is taking place. And, again, to me, it comes back to making investments and investing in programs, investing in people to provide them with the skills necessary to be successful so employers want to come here. We are now transitioning to a meds and eds economy, which I think is important. And there will be opportunities in the Mon Valley. I just read of a brief announcement down in Duquesne. I think a new facility is going to be built there to attract businesses there. That's going to be very, very important. I think access to various locations, for example, the Cary Furnace site. I'm excited about what's going to take place there between Rankin, Swissvale, and I think North Braddock may be a piece of that, but primarily Rankin and Swissvale. The flyover ramp is going to be put in there to access that development that's going to take place there. Those are the investments we have to make to set the stage, to get folks to want to come here and establish businesses and the like here. But we have a lot of job opportunities, but you have to have the right environment. And the right environment, unfortunately, these days means that we're competing with other states and other countries to attract businesses. And we have to have the resources available to make them want to come here. You know, in the southwestern part of the state, more in Washington and Greene County and Fayette, the Marcellus Boone is a major issue. And as we go forward, the cracker facility and any industry that may come from that is going to take place in Beaver and as I said earlier, in Washington. We've got to carve our niche in that area, and there's some opportunities that we have to pursue, but we have to have the infrastructure in place to be able to do that, and that's what we're working towards right now.
Barb, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to go to Lloyd. Lloyd, you're on the line with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Lloyd.
Hi. My question revolves around the feud between UPMC and Highmark. I think it's just unconscionable that UPMC is paying the highest rent in the city for all their office space in the U.S. Steel Tower, and yet they're prepared to box out most of the people here from their hospitals and their doctors. And so I want to know, what do you feel can be done about it, and how do you think this is all going to play out in the end?
Well, for the past couple of years, I've been very active at the forefront of trying to resolve this issue. We had great success about 2 years ago that culminated in the extension of the contract that will end on December 31st. A little disappointed, our second attempt to bring these entities together didn't play out as well as we would like. We have an agreement in place, as you know, that's going to try to address the concerns a lot of folks have. At the end of the day, I think what we have to do is look at how we define public charities, because I'm not sure that we have defined them in a way that I think is beneficial to our society, quite frankly. While the public charity institutions do great work, the universities in particular, in my view, I think we strayed from the original purpose. So what we have to do is go back and look at how we define public charities. That issue is going to be addressed next year. We are in the process of a constitutional amendment that addresses that. There have been some Supreme Court cases that have tried to redefine or set a different standard about how we define public charities, and that's been given local governments the ability to have greater leverage in those conversations, whether or not they're able to receive any tax revenues. That conversation has to continue, but it's got to go beyond that. It's got to be about openness and transparency in terms of how those resources are spent. It's got to be related to the review of these entities to see, like you said, exactly how they're spending money and what standards we're going to use them, hold them to. You may have seen today in the paper that Highmark is now suing UPMC for what they believe has been overbilling on cancer treatment and chemotherapy treatment. Those are the type of things that when you don't have a set of eyes looking at it, or you don't have an entity in place that monitors spending along those lines or prices, and not having an open competitive market, that you don't look at you look at quality, but you also got to look at price as well. And for too long, we've not been able to look at price, and I think we have to take steps to be able to do that. I know that Representative Dan Franco has been at the forefront from Pittsburgh, has been at the forefront of trying to do more in terms of bringing to light what these various procedures cost and the difference in cost at different facilities, but also the level of the outcomes that are there as well. So that's a great question. It's a large discussion that we're going to continue to have. But we have to have openness and transparency, and that's what we're going to be shooting for.
Lloyd, thank you very much for the questions. Senator, we have a lot of folks who want to talk to you this evening, and we're going to try to move through them very quickly. We're going to move to Marcia now. Marcia, you have a question about Medicaid expansion. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you, Senator Costa. The question that I have has to do with, I know that Corbett has recently gotten approval for a quasi-convoluted Medicaid expansion program. And I was just wondering if, should we get a different governor in there in the near future? Can that program be changed, or are we locked into that for the next few years?
The short answer is yes, it can be changed. Certain elements of can be changed simply by filing an amendment to the state plan. I think what's important is that while the governor has been touting this as his Healthy PA plan being successful, it is nothing like what he originally tried to do. All the bad things that were in his original plan, he has abandoned, are not part of this plan. And most importantly, as Senate Democrats have talked about, this is the plan that will utilize our managed care organizations that we have in place now. And I think that's a positive thing because that's a strong network that's very efficient and very effective along those lines. We still don't know all the details of some of the plan that relates to the benefits and the like, but the aspects that I think that could be changed, that may very well likely be changed down the road, if Tom Wolf wins, for example, relate to things like the premium cost. Now, there'll be a premium associated with, I think it's a very 2% premium charge that could be charged in 2016. However, there are reductions to that premium charge based upon wellness programs and things of that nature. So we at the state have the opportunity to have some creative ways in which we can offset a lot of those things. But my guess is that the new governor, will go in, look at what needs to be done, and go forward from there. But we have the flexibility. That was one of the questions I asked when we received our briefing last week. You know, what can we do come January if we have a new governor? Are we locked into this? And that was the issue. So to me, though, what's really important is that we have 500,000 folks who will now have access to a modest level of health care coverage. We are going to create jobs, which is something that's very, very important. Creating jobs in the medical community, medical industry, the delivery of medical services industry, $3 billion of infusion along those lines, tax revenue that's going to come from this, that's going to benefit Pennsylvania. From a budget standpoint, we're going to save $400 million a year going forward in terms of dollars that Pennsylvania taxpayers are not going to pay, but it will be shifted to the federal government that we'll be paying in Pennsylvania. Those are all the things that, quite frankly, we've missed out. We'll have missed a whole year of that. And that's extremely frustrating. Folks who would have been eligible back in January do not have that coverage today. They should, and it's very disappointing. But the devil's in the detail in terms of what the plan's going to look like as we go forward. We're going to monitor it, and we're going to fight to make changes we deem appropriate as we learn more and more about the details of this plan.
Marcia, that was a great question. Thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go now to Arnold in Rankin. He has a question about construction at the waterfront in Homestead. Arnold, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Well, thank you very much. Senator, I heard a lot that Barbara said from Swissville, and I was basically talking the same thing. But more or less, the minorities, you know, the thing is, idle time is negative time. And a lot of times that we get that label, you understand, from a first offense, you know, even being a minority and having that first offense, the system cuts us out and sets us up for failure. They're doing work down there at the Cary Furnace site. They're doing some work around in Braddock, you know, but you can count the minorities on these jobs. You know, we need help. We need Rankin is a small borough, but yet and still we still exist. We as men in the church try to let them know about God. That's the answer. But at the end of the day, they need money. And they're going about getting money in the wrong way. You know, we're killing each other. You know, whereas if we had some jobs, growing up, coming out of junior high and high school, we had an NYC program, things for these kids to do in the summer. These kids here in these boroughs have nothing at all to do, you know, and it creates problems where we're just killing each other. Think about these small boroughs. You know, think about the minorities, the young. All you have to do is turn on the TV, and every day that you turn the TV on, you hear about killing in these boroughs. That's because of no jobs. Jobs would help. That's because of ignorance, first of all, not being taught right from wrong. But yet and still, when you have an 8-hour job that you can go home and relax and buy your kids a sandwich, that's not happening in these areas. That's why the crime rate is so high. We need help.
Well, thank you very much, Arnold.
All right, thank you very much. You know, I agree, and I think we have to continue to work to try to do things along those lines to create those jobs. We have to develop the training programs to allow people the opportunity to have access to training programs to have the proper skills. Again, that's what Senate Democrats have been talking about in our PA Works program. We have a variety of plans to try to do that in various industries. You know, we have this influx of the Marcellus industry into Pennsylvania. I mean, again, we have to do it properly, and it has to be properly balanced. But that presents an opportunity for individuals to get engaged in this process. We've got to reach out into the communities, into the neighborhoods, particularly the old communities that are struggling, the financially struggling, to provide opportunities along those lines. You know, Rankin is going to be a new community in our district that I look forward to working with. I know a lot of folks there. You know, I just live right up the road in Forest Hills. So I recognize what needs to be done there and the challenges that are there and other communities like that. But it comes down to having the resources, having the programs through the Commonwealth to make the investments, and those programs are going to grow skills and give people the skills along those lines and start recognizing and developing those skills at an earlier point in time. At the end of the day, not everybody is equipped to go to college. Not everybody, you know, there's opportunities and successful lives can be led, and if you have the proper training with respect to skills in that nature, of that nature. So we have to do more along those lines. So we have our work cut out for us, but it's something that we are cognizant of, and we want to do the best we can along those lines.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Arnold. And, Senator, we're going to now turn to Michael. He has a question about emerging school districts. Senator, or Michael, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Mike Milberger. I live in Wilkinsburg.
Hi, Mike.
I'm on the Parks and Recreation Commission here and committeeman in 3-2. We look forward to being in your district.
Yeah, likewise.
Come on, dear. Same. you know, the biggest impediment to redevelopment here in Wilkinsburg is the school district because we're too small and too poor. What can the state do to encourage, pressure one of our neighboring districts to take us in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I dealt with this issue when the Duquesne School District, they did away with the high school and then later 7th and 8th grade, and developed a plan that was not necessarily well received by the community, but the students have been very successful. The kids from Duquesne are now in the West Mifflin and East Allegheny school districts, and that has been a great success. The dollars amount has been difficult to get folks to come to an agreement on, but we're working through that. To answer your question, one of the hardest parts of that whole discussion was the community's not wanting to take the students from Duquesne, and that's unfortunate. And I think likewise is the situation in Wilkinsburg, largely given the debt issues associated with the school district. and how we move forward along those lines. There are things that the school district can do to try to help that. I'm sorry, there's things that the state can do to help the school district. It means that the steps would need to be the state gets more directly involved along those lines like they did in Duquesne for a period of years and really work to make those transitions take place. It's going to, at the end of the day, what can we do? It's probably incentivize something along those lines to get Pittsburgh or to get Woodland Hills or to get some other surrounding community to consider bringing Wilkinsburg into the mix or figuring out a way maybe some schools, some neighborhoods, some parts of Wilkinsburg go into the city, some go into Woodland Hills, where it's more pro, or Penn Hills, figure it out. As the number of students in and around the area continue to decline, I think that we're going to have to really have conversations about figuring out how we merge some of these districts because the capacity will be there, but the students won't be there. And at some point, we have to become much more efficient, and we haven't been able to do that. But to give you a direct answer to your question, what can I do to get a school district, what can a state do to get a school district to accept Wilkinsburg, that's a tough question to answer, but I think it starts with, you know, appropriate level of resources to be able to encourage them and entice them to at least begin those discussions.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Michael. Senator, we're going to go to Denise now. Denise, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead. Denise, are you there?
I had a question in regards to the PA Works program and revisiting the minimum wage. What about the disability community, the people who are on disability, and they would like very much to work, but they're only allowed to make a certain amount of money before they're cut off, and I'm talking about a gross amount that's not that much. What are we going to do about that? Because that increases people's self-worth. And they want to do something, too, to work toward more self-sufficiency and stuff. What sector of the government decided that if a person is on disability, they can only make a gross amount of like $1,040, and if they make over that, then their benefits are cut off, and that puts them in a position where they lose health care or have to pay something toward the premium that they can't afford? How can we include them in the Pennsylvania Works community too?
Thanks.
And having worked in social service for many years, I see the impact on people's mental health in this situation too, which creates a constant stress of like, I want to work, but I can hardly do that and make it because of the way things are set up and what I'm allowed to make and when they start cutting and taking everything away. So somebody that wants to work like 18, 20 hours a week, I mean, they're really in a bad position.
You raise a great point, and that's a constant struggle that we in Pennsylvania have with the federal government. Those guidelines, for the most part, are set in terms of the number of hours and the amount they can make are set at the federal level. We believe that we have to have those conversations with our federal legislators, and we have done that in Pennsylvania. Again, we've taken steps backwards along those lines. We used to have a general assistance plan that folks who were disabled for, you know, temporarily disabled for a period of time were able to get a modest amount of money and help them, you know, stabilize their life, a couple hundred bucks a month. Those programs are gone. And, you know, it feeds into the downward spiral oftentimes with folks who are struggling to make ends meet, dealing with disabilities, variety of disabilities, and want to be part of the society, and want to be part of the community, able to do so, but simply can't afford they're not in the position to be able to do what they need to do. And oftentimes, you know, some of them choose who are not totally disabled, but have other issues they have to deal with, mental illness or whatever, and choose a path that is not good for them and not good for society. And again, it goes back to these dollars that we had a lot of federal, state dollars too, that have been cut by this administration and what I'll call human service programs, and that went directly, quite frankly, to the service providers, the individuals who are working, like yourself, who are working with these individuals. The pay they receive is some of the lowest pay, barely above minimum wage. They're dedicated, good folks. They can't sustain a family or live a life without the appropriate wages, and we're going to continue to fight along those lines. And that's where minimum wage comes into play again, to make certain that we increase that, to increase the standard of living for everybody along those lines. That's a good question.
Denise, thank you very much. I know we only just have a few minutes, a few seconds here left, Senator. I know we want to conclude here this evening, and you have a couple closing comments for the folks who have joined us.
Yeah, well, I want to thank everyone for participating. As I look at the computer screen, I see a lot of folks calling in, and I think that's wonderful. We will continue to have our telephone town hall forums. We had one. This will be the second one we've done. We'll probably do one another 4, 5, 6 weeks as the issues continue to percolate. Again, if people have any questions, they can follow us on Facebook or any issues there, or they can see some of the things that we're doing. They can look at Twitter. We have our Twitter as well. And finally, you know, they can always call our district office in Forest Hills, 412-241-6690 with any questions or any comments or concerns, or if we need any help on anything that we can help you with, whether it's a state issue or a state program need assistance, or whether it's facilitating community meetings or whatever the case may be, we stand ready to do that. So, and as I said earlier, contact our Forest Hills office or reach out to Facebook. We're on the web, www.senatorcosta.com, or call our district office. So, again, thanks, everyone, for participating, and I'm very happy to answer the questions that folks have had. Thank you very much.
This is Hugh Baird. I've been your moderator for this evening. I want to thank you all for joining us here. We had excellent discussion this evening. You've been a great audience, and we appreciate sharing your evening with us. Thank you, and have a good evening.